with Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 562 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Now, today I'm joined by, finally, an expert that I could just absolutely get so excited about. This is Miho Tanaka. Dr. Tanaka is the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program. Oh my goodness gracious, at Mass General Hospital. So she knows all the things we're doing wrong. And we're going to be talking about avoiding and trying to decrease women's unique fitness injuries. Because, honey, we are unique. There's no question about it. So she's also the chief medical officer for the New England Revolution and team physician for the Boston Red Sox and the Boston Ballet. That just brought back some really funky memories from my years in the San Francisco Ballet when they kept yelling at me, "You're too tall. Like, what can I do about that? Just talk to me." You know, I'm 10 years old. "You're too tall. You look like a little tree in the background." Okay, I'm 5'9", you know, hurt me. But anyway, oh my goodness gracious, Dr. Tanaka, welcome to the Herb Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh, I am so excited to be talking to you because you have such a breadth of experience in basically all things women's injuries and why we're so unique. Now, in our Her podcast audience is a mix of women who've just been kind of rocking it for a long time with physical activity and others saying, "Oh, I don't know, I'm going to, you know, like take the first step," or they're fearful. "I did take a first step and the whole thing went to hell. I got hurt and, you know, blah, blah, blah." And so what I'd love to do is take 10 steps backward and really have you look at why women have such unique injuries, especially around the knee and all the rest of it, with all the torquing and tennis and Serena Williams and all the rest of it. So I would love for you to be able to guide women a little bit now with some expertise about what to try to avoid doing when you're really getting into it.
It's kind of a loaded question because there's a lot of factors that play into this. But I would say that when it comes to injuries in women, we typically think of this in terms of the non-modifiable risk factor. So essentially how you are built versus the modifiable risk factors, which is more along the lines of how your muscles work, essentially. So in terms of, you know, the non-modifiable risk factors, this is what we always think about. Women are just built different than men. And there's a lot of different ways that this happens. But essentially, when we're talking about knees specifically, you know, the angles at the knees from the hips going down to the ankles is different. You know, this is often evolutionarily speaking from, you know, for childbearing purposes, but there's just more pressure at the knee, and that can influence that as well. We have wider hips, a lower center of gravity, our joints are proportionally smaller, our limbs are not as long. And so if you take that back to physics, essentially, and you think about how long your limbs are, that's kind of how you generate, you know, what we call the moment arm. So that's how you generate force. And so that's the reason that if you're comparing men and women in terms of strength or speed, that women just are not going to be as strong or as fast. It's purely a biomechanical issue. But when we talk about, you know, why they're more likely to get injured and what we can do to prevent that, one of the things that we know is that if you compare men and women, women are much more likely to have deficits and muscular imbalances, particularly during activities like landing from a jump or cutting and pivoting. So specifically, you know, women tend to have weaker hamstrings, and the hamstrings are actually the muscles that really support the knee ligaments, especially things like the ACL. They tend to have less core strength. And so the core is a huge stabilizer. And, you know, some people might say, well, how does that relate to the knee? But if your core isn't strong, you can actually have these imbalances that then put more pressure onto the knee as well. The thing that we call dynamic valgus. So that's essentially the position that your knee falls into, the sort of knock-kneed position that gets accentuated when you have muscular imbalances. So that tends to be more common in women as well. And each one of those factors has actually been shown in studies to increase your risk of knee injury. Those are kind of the thing, the ways that we typically look at this. Now, the thing about those modifiable risk factors, meaning the muscle imbalances, is that there are plenty of studies that have shown that you can actually change your risk for injury. So you can strengthen your hamstrings and you can work on your core strength and you can work on the position of your knee when you're landing. And this is especially critical in the younger population, so women under 20. But even as you get past the age of 20, even though it might not reduce your risk of specific types of ligament injuries, it will definitely help your performance. It will help your body awareness as you're playing sports and very likely lead to downstream effects, just not specifically related to ACL injuries, which is where the majority of this literature is.
Why is it in your 20s that it's so important? You know, I was half expecting you to say, well, once you become old, you know, when you're 50 and over, that's when everything kind of goes downhill anyway. I was half expecting you to say, well, it's most important in that demographic, but you're telling me it's the younger demographic.
This is a really good point. So I do think that there needs to be more studies in the maturing population of female athletes, but a lot of the data has been done on ACL injuries, which is one of the most common injuries that we treat as orthopedic surgeons. And what we know is that during puberty and then as people are growing, that is the highest risk for most types of orthopedic injuries. And muscle imbalances tend to become much more accentuated during that time. And so this is why we think that these exercises, these preventative exercises, are really important. Now, people haven't looked as much into ACL prevention as we get, you know, past the age of 40, because the majority of the people who have this type of problem and these injuries are playing cutting and pivoting sports. And so they end up being under the ages of 20 or 30. But to your point, you know, about the maturing athlete, there is a little bit of a different model that we think about as we kind of get into our 30s, 40s, and 50s. And this is the concept of, I don't want to call it aging, but I think, you know, this maturing is a good way to think about it. And essentially, you know, the way I describe it is that as we age, the same collagen that's in your skin and that's in your hair, as you start to see changes in your friends around you as they reach their 30s and 40s, is also in our muscles and in our ligaments and in our tendons. And so with that, we're going to find that our ligaments and tendons are much more brittle. They are less likely to handle load and they retain less water. And so all of these things can increase your risk of injury and make you more susceptible to things like inflammation, muscle tears, tendonitis, and all of those things. And I think that is, you know, for both men and women, a really challenging aspect of being an athlete as you go through life, because most people have a certain way of training and doing their exercises, or they've kind of learned a certain way to approach it, but now their body is responding differently. And that can be a really difficult thing to get used to as you're going through life.
So it kind of begs the question, you know, a little sidebar here. You mentioned collagen, and it's like one of the hottest supplements out there. So people are just like throwing it into shakes and doing whatever. You know, as an expert, do you think that's even worth it? You know, as we're dropping collagen as we mature?
I would defer to my nutrition colleagues in terms of the real science and the efficacy of, you know, the absorption of collagen. The real approach, I think, that we know is most effective to this sort of aging or degenerating collagen is changing the way you approach exercise and kind of understanding that these changes are happening and recognizing that you need to warm up more. You need to stretch more because your muscles are a lot stiffer than they used to be. They have less, you know, flexibility than they used to. And so, you know, warming up, doing all these things that a lot of people, you know, who come into my office complain to me and say, well, I never had to stretch, you know, before. I've never had to warm up. I can just go out.
Wait a minute.
You know,
was that me? I remember when I ran Boston, you know, I got an F minus in stretching. You know, my running coaches would just throw things at me. you know, you're in a rush. You just got through running 12 miles and you're like, can I get out of here already? And then I realized we can't do that anymore because I started feeling terrible. And recovery became my new, you know, best friend. Everything about recovery, let alone warming up to start with. And I began to be incredibly respectful of that only because I came through the school of hard knocks. I actually got a PhD in hard knocks. And, you know, it was like, why can't I just listen to experts and do the right thing? Well, because I'm a human being. And like so many of the people in the Her Podcast audience, we just screw this up right and left. So, but you just emphasized something that's so terribly important. I noticed that in my 40s, you know, I spent a lifetime being quite flexible. And then in my 40s, you know, as I coursed through perimenopause, oh, what a joy, I noticed I was stiffer. And I was shocked. It's like, whoa, you know, what happened there? I guess maybe that's when it begins to manifest itself a little bit. Yes, no?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that definitely kind of kicks that process into full speed. You know, the changes definitely start to happen around your 30s or 40s, but definitely around perimenopause and menopause, most women really notice a huge shift where these changes are accentuated. But, you know, the thing that I would say about this is that just because, you know, we're aging or maturing doesn't mean that we can't work out anymore. It just means that we have to be that much more deliberate about maintenance. As you said, kind of learning how to warm up and how to stretch and realizing that we have to actually put in that effort in order to be able to maintain the same level of exercise that used to come easily for us, you know, in our 20s.
I'm much more strategic. I actually sit down and put thought into it. Normally, I just ran into it and I was getting away with murder and, you know, do a triathlon, like knock that sucker out and, you know, just go somewhere and chill out and like, oh, we forgot our recovery and our stretching. So, you know, it's amazing how many of us do that. But as I get older, maturing, I find myself being so much more cautious because quite frankly, who wants to be injured? I mean, seriously, who wants to be injured? And I'm thinking now about injury prevention all the time, you know, like in a big way. So, you know, it's interesting. In your bio, which is absolutely extraordinary, everyone out there should know that Dr. Tanaka is not only an MD, she's a PhD. She's got a full alphabet soup, actually, after her name. she's an expert in something I was diagnosed with. Let me see. I remember it was during COVID, and it was probably around 2022 when I suddenly had a little funky feeling around my kneecaps. And I thought, okay, what's that about? Now, mind you, my gyms had been closed. I couldn't do a lot of my normal physical activity. And here's what my orthopedic surgeon said. You have incredibly strong legs. I have, you know, big muscles and I'm a fairly muscular person. He said, because you couldn't do your normal training because I had no access to my equipment and all the rest of it, there's only so much you can do with body weight. What I had been doing was actually shielding myself from what was my actual diagnosis, which was patellofemoral syndrome. I had to look it up. Okay. I've heard it. I kind of had a fairly good feeling. Here's the good news. My knees were fine. The space was beautiful. He said, I've always protected my knees. That was the good news. This was one of those things you hate it when doctors do this. First, I'm going to give you the good news. Your knees are cool. You know, you've never had a problem with the ACL or, you know, whatever. He says, here's the bad news. You have end stage. I love it when they start that. Now, all of a sudden, I'm a physician. I'm like, well, excuse me, what? You have end-stage osteoarthritic patellofemoral syndrome. So I said, okay, I need a drink. What the hell is that? and what do I do? And he said, well, you've been working on it for a while. right? And now it's just, you know, because your legs are so strong, they protected your kneecaps and all the rest of it. But I did notice I could no longer do deep knee squats. Those were out. And he said, bingo, no more of those, you know, past 90 degrees. So then I looked it up and I said, oh my God, it's one of the most, it's the most common injury, whatever. It's called runner's knee. Now, could you please explain what the heck this is and how I got myself in this mess?
Well, I mean, I'll do my best. You know, when it comes to patellofemoral pain, we've actually started moving away from the term syndrome. But, you know, that is what it had been called for so many years. And honestly, even within the orthopedic community, in one textbook about 30 years ago, patellofemoral pain was called the black hole of orthopedics because people just didn't understand what it was. But essentially, you know, as you said, it is like runner's knee and it refers to inflammation under the kneecap. And I think the thing that makes it so hard to understand is that there are so many different causes of things that cause inflammation under the kneecap. When you have inflammation under the kneecap, it will hurt in the front of the knee. It will hurt with things like running or jumping, or a deep squat going up and down stairs, obviously, and obviously with running. And then some people will say if they're sitting with their knees bent for a prolonged period of time, it really starts to become painful. And this inflammation is kind of a funny thing because it can happen due to pure overload. So some people can have totally normal knees, no problems with cartilage or their arthritis, and just overload their kneecaps. And this can cause patellofemoral pain.
That blew my mind. I never knew I was, as it were, overloading my kneecap. Now, how in the heck do you overload a kneecap? I mean, you know, we all know the knee thing, but the kneecap?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. So I would say, though, the majority of people who have this problem don't have normal knees, and they have subtle differences that may contribute to overloading the knee. So some of the patients might have some sort of alignment issues that are very subtle, but you might be a little bit knock-kneed, or you might be a little bit flat-footed, or you might be a little bit pigeon-toed, all of these things that just kind of exist within, you know, people who are normal and athletic and don't really show any sort of signs of severe disease over time, over the course of their lifetime can make them a
little bit more. I know what happened with me.
Yeah.
I know what happened when I first began to run, you know, years ago when dinosaurs ruled the earth. One of the coaches said, have you ever seen yourself run? I'm just saying. And I said, well, actually, how the hell do I do that? He says, let me just tell you what you look like, a duck. He said, so, you know, how many years did you do ballet? And I said, how did you know I did ballet? He says, you're running in first position. And I had no idea that the turnout that would have been beaten into me after years just kept sneaking in there. And I literally had to have a third eye. And I kept reminding myself, straight, straight, keep my feet straight. So to your point, I think that's what set me up.
Yeah, I would say that's very likely. And also, if you were a dancer, the other category of people who have this problem are people who are hyper lax. So they have some sort of, they're on the spectrum of instability. You know, what I treat as a surgeon is when people's kneecaps kind of pop all the way out, and that can be a huge problem.
All right.
Yeah. But most people don't actually have that. Yeah, that's pretty extreme.
Oh, that's a vision I'm not going to forget.
But that is, you know, kind of the extreme version of this. And there are a lot of people who have some instability, especially people like dancers who use that sort of hyperflexibility to their advantage. You know, that's what makes them good at it. But it means that they rely so much more on muscles to keep their joints stable.
You're so right. Oh my gosh, that blows my mind. Now, when we come back, I'm going to be talking to you about what another element that's going to complicate this whole picture, and it's a surprise. If you've ever picked up a product and thought, I have no idea what half of these ingredients are, this one's for you. SkinSafe is an app developed by Mayo Clinic that takes the guesswork out of shopping for skincare and personal care products. It uses decades of clinical research to analyze ingredients and match products to your unique skin profile, so you always know exactly what's safe for you. Whether you have sensitive skin, allergies, or just want to be more intentional about what you put on your body, SkinSafe makes it simple. Download the app for free and use the link in the description to get 20% off a SkinSafe premium membership. And we're back. Okay, what's that little Cracker Jack surprise Dr. Peak is talking about? Well, if we look around at women today, they're heavier. They're carrying more weight. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the number one reason for knee replacements in this country is overweight and obesity. Right? It's not belonging to the NFL.
Yeah, well, it's definitely the number one thing that's associated with prevention of knee replacement.
Yes. Is weight loss. Absolutely correct. Yeah. So what happens when you're heavier? I remember when I first started running, they said, okay, for every time you hit the pavement, you know, with your leg, you're taking like at least twice your body weight in terms of what your poor little knee is trying to cushion there. I can only imagine if you're walking around with an extra, say, 50 pounds, what's going on then? And does that set you up for what kind of problems?
Absolutely. So that in and of itself can lead to a whole cascade of problems. But since we're talking about the kneecap, what we know from biomechanical studies is that for every pound that you gain, it's 5 to 6 pounds with every step on your kneecap when you're doing things like going up and down stairs. And if you're jumping or running, it can even be 7 to 8 times. So think about if you gain 5 pounds, we're talking about a 30-pound load on your knees, kneecaps, with every step that you're taking. And this can really lead into this sort of problem and this sort of vicious cycle, because some people then, you know, start trying to run to lose that weight, their knees hurt more. So then they're doing even less activity and then they gain more weight and their knees hurt more. And it becomes this sort of horrible cycle. But that is directly related to that amount of inflammation that you can get in your knee, mostly because of that load. So it is an important consideration and a modifiable one for people to know about.
When I see a lot of these celebrities who are definitely obese, and they're wearing high heels, and they're dancing on stage in them, I'm in tears. I'm in tears for their knees. Tell us what's going on when you're wearing high heels.
Yeah.
On top of that, you know, they wear the super glittery shoes and whatever, and they're dancing around and singing and everything. And I'm like, I don't think this is good.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. I mean, when you're wearing heels, you're essentially putting even more weight and more pressure on your knees. And, you know, the tough part about understanding this is it's usually not one thing that's going to tip the scale for you. It's usually going to be a combination of weight and heels and activity. And honestly, the support that your muscles have is one of the biggest factors, because you could be maybe not doing too much or weighing too much, but you could have what we consider to be under support. If your muscles are weak or they're imbalanced, say like during COVID, if you stop working out and you stop doing as many things, then the normal amount of activity can suddenly feel like overload because your knees aren't able to, they're not used to seeing that stress.
That's a fantastic point. Yep, you're absolutely correct. You know what I found? As soon as the gyms opened up, and I learned my own lesson, and that is, you know, my hubby and I put together our own gym. We said, this is never happening again. So we spent way too much money, but we now have our own gym, so I can control all of this. But as soon as I was able to, and I accessed the equipment, I really built my quads, and my gastrocs are ridiculously strong. I have almost 17-inch gastrocs. Those are my calves. I'm like, where did these come from? They're like Jurassic calves. I even gave them names, Thelma and Louise. but they power me up hills when I'm cycling and get out of my way, right? And when I was doing my tour Châtelet, you know, in the ballet, it was like, okay, girlfriends, you know, you're still down there, I'm up here. But, you know, what I found was as soon as I was able to get back to strengthening again, I had no pain. Because I had never had pain before until I was, you know, the COVID thing happened and I couldn't access. Never had pain again unless I let my knees go beyond 90 degrees accidentally. And guess what? I can't kneel without cushion. Just the two things. So no more barbell squats, right? So you know what I did instead? It's called a workaround. I don't whine. I find ways to work around things. So here we go. Instead of that, I'm a kettlebell queen. So what I do is I hip hinge a deadlift for the kettlebell with a heavy kettlebell for so I can get my high-intensity interval training. And I'll double-hand it and up it comes and it's hip hinge. And my knees are fine except for one thing, and I need to ask you. They make all kinds of noise. Okay, so you could hear it across the damn gym. It's like snap, crackle, and pop, all right? What is going on? And I have no pain whatsoever. It's just I can hear the noise. Unless I do more of a sumo stance, instead of straight, I'm sumo. So that means that I'm turning my legs out a little bit at a diagonal, maybe like at about a 45 degree, and then most of the noise stops. All right, what's going on?
Yeah, so that sound that you're hearing is related to the arthritis that you were diagnosed with. And arthritis has to do with a wear and tear of the cartilage that's in your knee. So specifically when we're talking about the kneecap, the undersurface of the kneecap is lined with cartilage. And that cartilage has two functions. One is to be smooth so that it can glide up and down when you're bending and straightening your knee. And the other one is to be a shock absorber. So when you're doing things like kneeling or squatting, that it can absorb that shock. And so if it starts to break down, then you're going to start to feel like these potholes, you know, as you're doing those squats, you might hear some crunching sensations. And then as your cushion starts to wear down, you'll notice it, as you were saying, with kneeling, or you might even feel like if you do too much on it, it's more likely to be reactive. Your knee might be painful, it might become swollen. And the reason for that is when there's not enough cushion to absorb the stress in your knee from the activities that you're doing, it transfers all the stress to the bone. And then this is when your knee becomes painful and it becomes swollen. But you bring up a really good point about now not having pain. And I think this is really important to know because a lot of people think, oh my God, I have arthritis. Now I need a replacement, knee replacement. You know, my life is over and I'm going to have pain unless I do that. But, you know, there's actually this really interesting study that, you know, I don't know how they ended up doing this. This was like 30 years ago. And there's a famous orthopedic surgeon out of UCSF who let his brother put an arthroscope in his knee. So surgery while he was awake. And they did this study where they kind of poked and prodded different structures in the knee to see which ones were sensate and which ones were insensate. And the reason why this pertains to our conversation now is that the cartilage under the kneecap, which has long been blamed for this patellofemoral pain, you know, chondromalacia, it's the cartilage issue. It was completely insensate, even though we had historically blamed these cartilage problems for people's anterior knee pain and patellofemoral pain. We now know that it's not so much the cartilage, but the inflammation and what we call the synovium, so the lining of the joint around it, which is so sensitive. And so if you can get rid of that inflammation as you have, you can still have this sort of degeneration, but not have pain, which is not the ideal situation if you're trying to avoid surgery.
Yeah, someone once said, you know, when I was talking to my orthopod several years ago, I said, well, what do people do eventually? He goes, you know, you can get like replaced kneecaps. I said, what? And so I looked at him, I said, oh, that looks special. I said, tell you what, I'm just going to hit the gym and build up my muscles and y'all just have a good day and everything. I don't want any damn surgery, you know, with all due respect. to all of our wonderful surgeons. I just didn't want any. But, you know, let's get back just for a moment, please, because I've had a lot of, you know, my listening audience say, you know, what do you do when you're not perfect, you know? And so maybe you're 30 pounds over and whatever. I mean, if you look at the statistics, we have about 43% of adult women right now are approaching, you know, basically obese. And that means 50 and over, 50 extra pounds and over. Actually, the majority of American adults have been overweight since the end of the 1990s. But nobody really brought it up because what happened was things got normalized, like, 20 pounds, who died? And so we ended up with this little mess here. So given the fact that, you know, we have a lot of people who have their heart in their hand and they say, I want to get more fit. I want to take better care of myself, et cetera. And then they go see a bunch of runners run by and they go, I want to do that. And then I have to like grab a leash and drag them back and say, no. And then I explain to them what happens, you know, double your weight. Let's see now, you're 220. Yeah, that's 400 pounds on your poor little knee. Do you hear that screaming? Yeah, that's your knee. And so what I have everyone do, you know, is walk. When they're walking and you're heavy, you're burning more calories. It makes more sense. It's like if I gave you or me a coat that had 50 pounds on it, and I told you to go take a walk for 3 miles, you're going to burn a lot more calories because you're basically, for all intent and purposes, powerlifting. You're lifting, you know, and you have to do that, right? Makes sense?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what do we say to these wonderful people? I just tell them to walk, walk, walk. And then at what point, let's just say the person who's, you know, she's 5'6", 225, she's just dropped 50, okay? She's not quite, you know, like a runner thing, body or whatever, but is it okay for her to run with an extra, you know, maybe 25 pounds on board? Is that going to kill anybody here? Or should she wait? Or what should she do?
Getting into running or returning to running for some people is a really challenging thing. And the reason for that is running is actually a really difficult thing to do. You know, we take it for granted because we do it as children, we run around. But if you think about the mechanics of running, it's a series of single leg squats, being able to stand on one leg and jump and push off and to propel your body forward. So you need strength, you need cardiovascular fitness, you need endurance, you need muscle control, and all of these things have to then come together and be sustainable for the amount of time that you're running. And so the most important thing that you need to do before you start running is to build a good foundation of each of those things before you put them all together. You know, this means developing strength, but also developing things like endurance. You don't really want to run to get in shape, because that's when your form starts to fall apart. You start to, you know, run past what your muscles can handle. And that's when all of the load gets shifted onto your joints. And so I think getting, you know, as you said, starting to walk, but also doing some weight training, also cross training. So getting on the bike or getting in the pool and making sure that your cardiovascular fitness is not the limiting factor when you're running is probably one of the most important things. And then when you're starting to do it, I think there's two main key concepts. One is to make sure that you're not doing too much too soon. And so you have to, you know, do a little bit, not go as hard as you can for as long as you can, but start with like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, because really something is better than nothing. And really what we know is that our bodies are not capable of increasing our strength or our endurance by more than about 10 to 20% each week. And so this means if you do 10 minutes and it's hard, you're not doing 20 minutes the next week. You know, you're doing 12 and then 15 and it has to go that way, because if you push yourself beyond that, which many people can when they're motivated, their muscles just can't keep up with that. You know, just like you can't get in shape, you know, in 2 weeks, really. Your body needs that time to adapt. And if you go too hard, too fast, that is the most common reason that people end up with injury. The other thing has to do with the load and the impact. So this is what you were referring to in terms of the body weight and how much pressure is on your joints. And running is one of the things that just really magnifies any changes in weight. But if you can budget how much load your knees are seeing, so making sure that, you know, maybe you're not running every day of the week, but some days you're biking, some days you're on the elliptical, some days you're swimming, so you're still getting those types of workouts, then what you'll find is that your body will start to adapt to that load, and then you can slowly increase the amount of impact. So running is not just, you know, fitness and strength, but also your body's ability to handle that load on your knees and on your joints.
I have to tell everyone, I have to restrain them physically. Just stop, you know, take this patiently as best you can, because people, you know, they go to TikTok. And overnight, I became a runner. No, you didn't. You're lying through your teeth, but, you know, you want to get some clicks and, you know, and somebody sponsoring you. No, this takes quite some period of time. You know, truth be told, the grand majority of people are not runners. The absolute majority of people do not run. They just don't. And that's fine. That's fine. Now you know, when you were at Stanford, you were a member of the varsity track and field team. We're not talking to you because, because you were born to be a runner. I'm actually, if you see my body, I'm a mesomorph. I'm very muscular. I have no business doing marathons. You know, I only did it because you get a really cool medal and you meet all these really nice people. Right about half marathon, you know, when you become homicidal, you know, you just meet all these great people. And then that was it. So Boston was my last. I said, okay, we're done with this and we'll just move to the triathlon where, you know, I won't be so bored anymore. But I'm actually a sprinter.
Yeah.
So, you know, my body was built for the sprint. I have no business doing endurance at all. And so I think part of this is you have to look at yourself and tell your true truth. You know, you really do. Yeah. And as you mature and you change, like I don't really do that much running anymore at all. I really don't find it pleasurable. I don't find it necessary. And my knees are like, don't even think about it. So, you know, there are so many other things to do. I'm a cycler. I'm a swimmer. I'm a master swimmer. I'm a, you know, an advanced hiker. I've done the Grand Canyon twice. No problem. There are so many other beautiful things to do. And to your point, functional training and cross training are so healthy. Why? Why?
It has to do with, I think, several things. One is that more and more we're starting to recognize that if you do the same thing all the time, then that is what increases your risk of injury because you're not giving those muscles a break and you're also not generalizing your strength and building a good foundation. And more we're seeing this in kids as well. And this sort of single sport specialization where people used to play 3 or 4 sports and now they're just, you know, specializing in baseball and they're starting when they're 10. And, you know, all of these things lead to a greater risk of injury. But we see this in adults as well, doing one thing all the time. Definitely not good. But I think the other thing is that the more you diversify what you're doing, the more you're able to, as you said, find what makes sense for you. And I would say the number one most important thing when it comes to exercise for anybody is sustainability. You know, it's not just running the next marathon or dropping a few pounds, you know, this month or next month, but it's really how long can you maintain this amount of exercise so that you can maintain your mobility later in life. And so it has to be something that you like, something that you have access to. And I think for most people, keeping it diverse and being able to be flexible with what they're doing and also making it a social component as well for a lot of people is really what drives them as opposed to just being fixated on one specific exercise.
at the end of the day, women are unique. We have all these delightful little imbalances in our body. The grand majority of women are not told this. What I'm asking everyone out there to do, you know, following what Dr. Tanaka has been saying and just sort of piling onto it, is I am begging you to get appropriate guidance from a trained, right, trained fitness professional. So as you know, I'm with the American College of Sports Medicine. We have by far the most rigorous certification program for fitness professionals. Run on over to the American College of Sports Medicine's website and link up with somebody who's local, who's passed that certification, so that you know that you're going to be protected. It's so terribly important. And when it comes to women, it's like you just want to ask that question. Be bold and just put it out there. Are you comfortable working with women? Because we have a different anatomy. We're not a halfback for the Raiders. You know, this is not happening. We are who we are. You know, do you know how to work with them? Ask that question. Be bold. You know, and you're protecting yourself. That's actually what I've done for a long time. You know, my running coach when I did my final marathons was Jeff Galloway, who just passed away. And he was the one who taught me the walk run. And kind of like the walking part. But, you know, once you got really into it, it was like, no, okay, you know. And this is one reason why I never had any meniscal tears or ACL issues or whatever else, because I took really good care of my knees. Little did I know, my kneecaps were dissolving into dust. But but now I've learned, and now you've all learned out there in their podcast land, these things do happen. And of course, with the maturing process in our lives, osteoarthritis shows up. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a use issue. I've been using my body for decades and I'm happy about that. I've had some pretty good times and now it's time to pay the piper. and so I just work around it and I'm actually perfectly fine. I'm totally good with all that. I did have to stop the advanced Tai Chi Quan that I was doing because the deep, kind of the dragon and snake poses. Yeah, I had to have a little conversation with my Tai Chi Quan master. I said, you know, let me just give you a little handout on the patellofemoral syndrome. yeah, it's not working for me one way or the other, but there you have it. You know? And you know, what I'm thinking for women as they mature, they also pick up other issues. You know, you've got osteoporosis, osteopenia. You have scoliosis that's showing up right and left. And if you want to really feel imbalance, try scoliosis sometime. So adult onset scoliosis is actually incredibly common. You and I have a mutual friend, Dr. Michael Gardner at Stanford University, and he spends a lot of time with scoliosis patients, and I was absolutely blown away by the incidence. It's over 60% by the time you hit the age of 60, and most people, most women have no clue unless it's found incidentally on an x-ray for some other reason, and, you know, they get the old, by the way, you know, your spine looks a little looks a little rotated. You might want to look into that. And nobody pays any attention to this. So it makes women more imbalanced. It's crazy, you know. So as you mature, you've got all these extra little layers of complexity, right?
With the things that you're mentioning, I don't think it all has to be doom and gloom, you know. And probably one of the most important things for things like, you know, even though we can't prevent scoliosis, or just like you couldn't prevent arthritis, and we certainly aren't encouraging people to stop doing activity and stop using their joints. But the more you can kind of keep your foundational strength, and by that I mean things like even your postural muscles, the muscles that support your back and kind of keep, you know, support your spine, these are all the things that kind of work against those processes that you were mentioning. And those are also the muscles that you lose as you mature. You're just not able to keep those muscles up without a deliberate process of doing that. And that's why things like yoga and Pilates are not only popular, but really, really helpful for women of our age and as we age, because it just helps us to support all of those processes that are aging, you know, and it just helps us to fight that process.
You are so right. I love Pilates. It's another reason why dancers, you know, use Pilates so much all the time too. But Pilates also just extends and elongates the spine, and it allows you to work with that. And you mentioned the P word, posture. Okay, everyone out there, sit up. Now, I saw you. You weren't sitting up. You were doing like the little hunch thing. Okay, now how long does it take before you blow it after I told you to sit up? 11 seconds. It's gone. You're right back to slouching again. So to your point, my goodness, I spend so much time on my core and my back muscles, you know, just that whole kind of girdle almost, you know, that kind of holds you up. And I literally correct myself all day long. I roll my shoulders back. So my scapula are saying, yo, to each other in the back. It just keeps, well, first of all, it feels really good when you roll your shoulders. And then it just sort of helps kind of align you again. And when you get out of a chair after you, well, has anyone ever taken a picture of you in a chair? Oh, that's you, the one who looks like a cashew. You know, you're like bent over, little nasty looking thing. So, you know, you get up and you're still like a little cashew, and you have to just deliberately, I have like post-its everywhere, you know, no cashew. And, you know, a cashew with a big red thing through it. Back and forth. And then I roll my shoulders. And because, you know, girlfriends, you know, if you want to drop some waist circumference, stand up straight. Okay? It works. It totally works. But you've got to work those core muscles to hold your posture. And to your point, Dr. Tanaka, if you're not working out, like doing your stretching and your strength training, good luck with that. It's going to be very hard. And the next thing you know, your waistline is sticking out here. It's residing in a different state. And then suddenly you're all bent over and you're going, I swore I'd never look like this as I matured. And there you are. So, you know, have someone take a little picture of you kind of randomly if you want to scare the hell out of yourself. And then remember that. Stick that picture somewhere like, no, we're not going there. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's not even just about, you know, your back and how you look and how you feel, but even things where you're going up and down the stairs, or if you are looking at power lifters, you know, form is so important. The way you're positioning your body is not just about standing up straight and making your spine straight, but it basically puts all of your joints, which are starting to wear down, in the most favorable position to be able to handle different types of loads. And so even for people who might say like, I don't want to do yoga or Pilates, I just want to like get out there and work out and, you know, play sports, your performance is going to be affected if you don't have a good postural foundation, you know, and good strength there in order to be able to support some of the more complex movements that you're doing. So I think it should play in not just to when you're sitting and not just, you know, to when you're standing up from a chair, but for every step that you're taking, everything that you're doing, there should be a little bit of this deliberate process in terms of maintaining your posture.
I've learned so much. I'm like a little sponge, as I know everyone out there in their podcast land is. We can listen to you forever. You are fabulous. I am so happy you came here and set the record straight. It's wonderful to know you're out there helping women as well, because you are the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Massachusetts General Hospital. And it's just also wonderful to see a woman orthopedic surgeon so that we don't have to woman-splain things, you know, as it goes through. You're like, oh yeah, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, and understand where you're coming from. Just absolutely fabulous. I cannot begin to thank you enough for coming to the Her Podcast and really enlightening all of us. Dr. Miho Tanaka can be found at her website, DRM, as in Mary, IHO, Tanaka, TANAKA.com. Again, Dr. Miho Tanaka.com to learn more about her marvelous work. And Miho, all I can say is, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. This was so much fun. I appreciate you having me here.
Way fun, way fun. And I also want to thank my sponsor, and that is SkinSafe. And, you know, again, if you want to really understand what's in the ingredients, everything that you put on your body, SkinSafe is an app developed by the Mayo Clinic. Sorry about Mass General. By the Mayo Clinic that takes the guesswork out of shopping for skincare and personal products. So just download the app for free and use the link in the description in our sponsorship to get 20% off a SkinSafe premium membership, because you want to know what you're putting on your skin. I'm just saying that's how important it is. Now, take a moment and leave us a review, because our entire team runs up and down the stairs with no pain in their knees, waiting to hear from you. We love your feedback. Now, this has been a production of Podcast Health. And what I really want to say is, your time on this wonderful earth may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. And one of those things is taking better care of your joints and your skeleton, just as Dr. Tanaka said. So everyone, get on out there and seize the day. A little carpe diem. How about that? Thanks for listening.